morning, everyone. I would like to call the council meeting, the Region of Queens Municipalities Regular Council Meeting, Tuesday, December 14th, 2021, to order. And agenda, and first we'll need approval of the agenda as presented. Moved by Councilor Gidney, seconded by Councilor Brown. All those in favor? Carried. First item on our agenda are years of service. And as you all are aware, the Region of Queens Municipality is made up of many, many departments located in different areas throughout our county. We employ approximately 118 staff, and events like this are an important opportunity for us to get together as a group and recognize those who are responsible for the many activities of the municipality. Among the operations of the Region of Queens, we have our administration building, Hillsview Residential Care Facility, Public Works Department, Grounds Crew, Landfill, and Queens AmeriCenter. Today we are recognizing 16 of Queens staff representing a cumulative total of 210 years of employment and public service. Those here today have reached a milestone in their employment, ranging from 5 years to 25 years of service. And for the new counselors, we do use in increments of five. 5 year people receive the milestone certificate at 10 years, 15, 20, and 25, respectfully. Once we are all finished, we're going to ask everyone to gather who's received these awards for a group photo, which Heather Cook will take for us. So, first on the list are the 5 year milestone certificates. These are important certificates that were created for special events such as this. So, the 5 year certificates are awarded to Lawrence Cunningham, who is a temporary machine operator laborer of capital projects, Dalton Freeman, who is a temporary heavy equipment operator capital projects, Kevin Henderson, who is groundskeeper and works with the grounds crew, T.J. Warrington Jodry, landfill assistant working at the landfill, and Larry W. Wynott, temporary heavy equipment operator capital projects. Any of these people are present? I do not believe so. Okay. Moving right along. They're all shy. We're going to tell Stan about them. So, well, there's three staff members who have been with the Region of Queens for 10 years. And the 10-year awards are presented to Penny Benedict, who's the tax clerk for the Finance Department, Joanne Lenathan, and do not see Joanne here, who's the fitness coordinator at Queens Place AmeriCenter, and Rosalind Roder, who's accounts receivable finance department. So I would ask Penny and Rosalind to come forward, please. We're going to dispense with handshakes, because you know.
Thank you.
Don't run away.
Yeah.
Don't run away. Our 15-year awards are presented to David Benedict, who is a temporary machine operator and laborer for the capital projects, Colin Hartland, who is machine operator and laborer with Public Works, Dana Henley, who is community development coordinator for economic development and recreation and healthy communities, and Chris Wombolt, who is landfill assistant with the landfill. So I again would ask Colin, I see you here, and Dana.
Let her go first. She'll take the
other. Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's you.
All right. Well, Dana, we put your envelope in a big box.
Right.
Why, thank
and
you.
Colin, thank for you. Thank you very much. So one staff member has been with us for 20 years, and I was here when this first person started, and that's Wendy Connor. And she's a planning and development technician from our planning department, so Wendy. Connors, did I say Connor?
Yeah.
Yes, Connors. And 25-year awards. And we're pleased to present 25-year awards to Jamie Belong. I saw Jamie come in the door. Terry Monroe, residential care assistant for Hillsview Acres. And Kevin Hickel, special project foreman, public works. So, Jamie, Terry, and Kevin. Terry, congratulations. Jamie.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you. And Kevin. On behalf of senior staff and council, I would just like to say that it's a pleasure to work with all of you, and the knowledge, experience, and the strong commitment that you have serving the public, along with the pride that you show the region of Queens municipality, is very evident. And on behalf of council and the residents of the community, thank you for your hard work, and all of those who receive their certificates and their gifts, would you please come forward for a group photo? The suffrage you have to do
always,
to win an award.
You used to get your Todd and Kevin there first.
One Todd. That's better. Oh, yeah.
No, the tie is straight. Kevin's crooked.
I got to tape it or something.
I could say something.
Yeah, because the microphones are on.
There we go. Richmond's back. I think upside down, isn't it?
Merry Christmas.
Okay, so I jumped ahead. We already did changes approved to the agenda. So number three, tabling our petitions. Are there any petitions to table today? Hearing none, public question comment session. Please remember to state your name and your civic address, and we allow up to 5 minutes for comments, questions. Not at this point in time. Councillor Charlton chaired that committee. along with two other counselors, and she may perhaps state why, but like the report says, those issues are already covered by other levels of government. So it's not really our jurisdiction to cover them. They're already covered.
It'd be a bit more difficult to get in touch with these people with respect to fireworks and so on that's going on evening and also with the battle hawk version or whatever. So it's not as easy as we could with our local government. Anyway, that's the law. Anyway, at this point in time, I would, Mayor Norman, I'd like to wish you, your counselors and staff, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And Merry Christmas to you as well, Leon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Yes? Remember to state your name and your civic address, please.
Sure, I don't want to have my back to anybody because it's hard to lip, you can't lip read anymore, so you can't hear. My name is Ann Laws, and my residence is at 19 Old Meeting House Road in Beach Meadows. And my cottage location is at 39 Rock Island Lane in Montana. First off, it's always good to start with the good stuff. I'd like to thank the region for establishing the ad hoc bylaw committee to review the proposed bylaw that came before and see to review public input. And I'd like to thank them for also putting, I suppose it's not the committee that does this, it's the CAO that puts on the background detail for what was on about this whole recommendations that are coming to council today, because that was there for all to peruse, and I did that, as anybody could. And of course, there's the ability, as Mayor Norman said, for public input between the first and second readings of the recommendations that have come. And I'd like to thank you guys for dressing, because that brought a smile today, which is good too. The other things, the things that I'd like to say today are probably a little premature in the fact that this is just today that the recommendations are coming to the public or to council. And but I want to say them because I think I will come here each council meeting from here on in and continue to say them. I went over the Municipal Government Act, like all citizens should. But I know that until I actually had any concerns about fish farms or noise, I didn't do it. So I'm well aware of the Municipal Act, as I think all citizens should be. And I know that the purpose of a municipality, one of the things, is to develop and maintain safe and viable communities. I also know that in that Municipal Act, it says that a council may make bylaws for municipal purposes, respecting the health, well-being, safety, and protection of persons. And so, given that the region has had complaints, it is the responsibility of a municipality to address complaints and to see that they are dealt with. I also recognize that there is a provision or a section in the Municipal Government Act that says, section 185, that says a municipality and its officers and employees are not liable for damages caused by it in remedying or attempting to remedy a contravention unless the municipality was grossly negligent. So I put those out there. When I read, of course, the anybody could have read it and printed off the recommendations put in proposed bylaw form that came today. So I'm going to comment on those just quickly because I don't know how much time I have left. However, it was good to see that there was a bit of a change in the quiet hours from 12 a.m. to 12 p.m. to 6 a.m. before. Now from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. And that is good. However, what gives cause for concern is that this still doesn't pass Health Canada standards for, I mean, it's just the minimum for adults age 18 on, which is seven to nine children or families. But also, there's been no change at all with regard to address the problems of those who experience unreasonable noise between the hours of the proposed 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. Responsibility, accountants, and also to the fines. People, I was kind of interested to see that a person gets a buy if they pay a fine early. I don't know the last time that I got a speeding ticket, but it was $280. But when the officer came to my window, he didn't tell me that if I paid it in 14 days, I would pay $196, which is the same ratio as what you're giving a person who is disturbing. I don't get it. It's interesting. Now, I'm going to reflect more on it, and I understand that people love to have fun. I like to have fun. But I think that if there's a problem in one part of our municipality, it's not good enough or responsible enough for a region or council to say, it's just happening there. That's all I can say about that. So I put those things out there. Overall, the recommendations that are coming today, I agree with Leon, are very, very much the same practically as the old bylaw. And that is, given all the complaints that have existed, health and wellness is a big issue. And when a complaint comes to you about it, you're responsible. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Are there any other members of the public who wish to speak? Hearing none, I'll move on to 5.1, regular council minutes, November 23rd, 2021. Is there an approver? Moved by Councillor Gidney, seconded by Councillor Hawks. All those in favor? Passed. Approval of the minutes, special council meeting December 1st, 2021. Is there a mover? Moved by Councillor Romero, seconded by Councillor Brown. All those in favor? Carried. 6.1 is ad hoc noise bylaw committee recommendation. There is a recommendation in the package. If someone would so move that recommendation, Councillor Brown.
I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality give first reading to a bylaw respecting noise.
Seconded by Councillor Charlton. As we've just heard from one of the public speakers, this is first reading of a bylaw. Second reading would see it passed if we go through first reading. And are there any questions respecting the contents of the proposed bylaw? Any questions from council? Councillor Fancy?
I always like when we bring out a new recommendation that we try to highlight all the changes, so we not just say we're going to do this, but maybe the chair of the committee could highlight the changes.
Councillor Charlton?
So I'm losing my voice, so bear with me. I'm sorry if you can't hear me. When the committee met, as mentioned, we went over the Municipal Government Act, the Education Act, Interpretation Act, Protection of Property Act. Had a lot of background to highlight where we were going with it and with our feedback. And a lot of the concerns from the committee was the potential to make more problems, if that makes sense, Councillor Fancy. Sure. Speaking from my own concerns, some of the concerns I received were the fact about the provisions on noises outside of the quiet time hours and how this could impose for young families and provoke more neighborhood disputes. So the consensus of the committee really was to enhance the quiet time to allow for the sleep that Councillor Brown had previously without imposing hardships for farming and things like that, because there were those concerns of the daytime, recognizing that this won't solve all the problems. I think it's impossible to. But the consensus of the committee mostly was to take out Schedule A that was proposed in the first reading of the previous, and to change the quiet time hours and not try to, excuse me, not try to manage things like fireworks and things like that. That answer your question?
Okay, yes.
I don't know if Councillor Brown or Councillor Mayor want to add anything to that, but they saw on the committee as well.
Councillor Brown, would you like to add anything to this discussion?
I'd like to add that, you know, when people look at this, they don't see a huge change, but one of the biggest changes is our old bylaw had actually no quiet hours. We had four individual things, and let me see if I can say them here. Phonograph, gramophone, radio, or sound apparatus were the only four things banned from use between midnight and 6 a.m. Any other noise was allowed. So in this bylaw we have now that we're presenting, we actually have a quiet hour from 11 till 6 where any noise that disturbs the neighborhood is prohibited, which actually gives people in the neighborhood 7 hours that they can be guaranteed to have some peace and quiet. I know it's not what people want. Some people want it. It's more than other people want it. It's, you know, one of the definitions of a successful negotiation is when both sides are upset. You know, that everybody thinks they lose out. But in this case, I think we actually did give them some quiet hours, which they didn't have access to before. Nobody should be surprised that I was not happy with the way this ended out. But we set a committee to set this out. We asked for representation from every district of the county. And, you know, we came to a consensus that this is what most people wanted. And we will have to support that.
Councillor Merrill, would you like to add anything?
No, I agree. We did start out with one from every district. There was consensus. Definitely didn't like the prescribed day. So they pretty well covered everything.
So to Councillor Charlton, the members on the committee, when you said consensus, was it 100% agreement from the committee members?
Yeah, when we met at a few times for our meetings, you know, we had healthy debates and people agreed and some disagreed. But at the end of the day, what it came down to was that Schedule A was removed and we got full agreement from the committee to do that. And this is the document that's here today, recognizing it's a living document. And, you know, like Dave, Councilor Brown said, it's not what some had hoped for, and others were afraid of the potential of what was coming with Schedule A. So this is where we're sitting at current time.
And Schedule A was on the bylaw that was created by staff that actually gave levels between 6, that also cited noise between 6 a.m. in the morning and 11 p.m. at night.
Yes, and for example, as someone who lives in Liverpool, I had a lot of concerns from surrounding neighbors and constituents about the imposed sound levels on property lines. I mean, if you look at a street like mine on Park Street, everyone is so close that things like that, those were really a lot of the concerns that I got with Schedule A. And if you have larger properties, then those things are more reasonable, but for ones that are closer, they're not.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from Councillor Gidney?
I'm just going back to the presentation we had earlier. Now, what happens between 6 a.m. and 11 p.m. for unreasonable, like it's, like it's so the doors are open? Like, I don't understand.
This, Councillor Brown.
Between 6 a.m. and 11, the RCMP can still lay disturbing the peace. If somebody is unreasonably disturbing their neighbors between that time, they can lay a charge of disturbing the peace, which is an act under the criminal code. And with our old bylaw, they were loath to do it because it would give somebody a criminal record for a noise complaint. if that still happens through the day, that's still an option for them, but it's not likely to go forward.
Any other questions from members of council? Councilor Charlton?
I'm just wondering, CEO McNeil, if there's anything that we're missing to highlight that you can think of?
Not specifically in the bylaw, it's all explained in the report, I think, in the background information. Just that this today is first reading. Gets publicly advertised in the newspaper, and it'll come back so there's lots of opportunity another month for if residents have time over the next month to read through it, have any questions, any concerns, any comments, they can still bring them forward to council, and it'll come back to council the second meeting in January. I don't have the date in front of me, but it'll come back then for second reading. If it does get adopted, then it has to be advertised again in the newspaper after that. And before we can issue SOTs or summary offense tickets, which is the ticket at the door or the ticket immediately, it has to go to the province for approval, which takes typically 12 to 15 months. They have been seeing an upswing they have been processing them quicker, but it may be back to the 12 to 15 months. So we can still issue tickets, but they just become long form summons, which means the person has to go directly to court. There's no opportunity to give them an out of court summons for the short period of time until it gets approved by the province through the summary offense ticket regulations.
So, CAO McNeil, the council meeting will be January 25th. And in question, in the comment respecting early payment, a lesser fine, I believe we have other bylaws that also read like that. Could you give us reasoning why, if people pay their fine within that 2-week period, that fine is reduced?
It's when we go to court on occasion, our bylaws are always seen at the low on the order of the pecking order for importance to the courts. And so if we go to court for a noise bylaw and we don't offer a out of court settlement initially, the judges typically don't look favorably upon us, and they either give the person not guilty because we're taking up the court's time with stuff that they don't seem as important or don't believe is important, or they'll issue the minimum fine, which is typically the lowest fine possible. In the past, if you look at some of our old bylaws, used to be like $100. And so for us to go to court, and in this particular case, the fine is proposed at not less than $500. For us to go to court and prosecute somebody, it's probably going to cost us $7,000-$8,000. And so it doesn't make a lot of sense to go to court for $7,000 or $8,000 in order to get a $500 fine. So in this particular case, what the court has authorized, and that's why it takes quite a while to go through the legislative process, is for us to give another court fine, which is slightly less, and to encourage people to pay the fine, understand they made a mistake, and to hopefully it's a lesson for them in learning that they don't repeat that mistake. It doesn't prevent us from going to court in subsequent times, or to go directly to court if it is an egregious offense that somebody is doing something that's just so out of character, out of the community nature, that we can go directly to court. But to avoid significant legal costs and to avoid tying up the courts, which they have told us in the past to stop doing, then that's the purpose for the out of court settlement. And so many of our fines for our bylaws have that out of court settlement, because otherwise, if we went to court automatically for every one of our fines, we'd be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially in legal fees every year to prosecute people for what many would see as our minor offenses.
Are there any other questions from any member of council? Councilor Brown?
To add to what Chris just said, if I've got it right, if we have somebody who is a repeat offender, they don't always get the option to pay the $350 fine. The police can lay a long form summons to go directly to court, and at that point, our fines have an upper limit of $10,000. So the court is not going to give a $10,000 fine first time, but if the person winds up back in court several times or they've been charged several times, the court has that option to make a fine that is significant for them.
That's correct.
Yep.
Any other, Councilor Romero?
And we decided on the 6 p.m. For forestry, farming, summertime hours. That's what we looked at.
6 a.m.
6 a.m.
Yes, 6 a.m.
Not 6 p.m.
6 a.m.
Any other comments? Councillor Fancy?
No, as I understand it, during the day, you know, I don't even look at the hours here, but during the day, the RCMP will be the one who would be looking at these situations, and they will still be concerned that if they find that it will be on their record, that this will be an issue going forward, that they may not, I don't know, I'm just trying to source this out, what we're talking about here. So they're scared of finding them because it could go on their record.
Yeah.
If I may clarify, it's not the RCMP. There's no issue with the RCMP. The issue is the RCMP do their due diligence, they determine whether a fine is applicable, whether someone has breached the law.
Right.
They take it to the Crown Prosecutor. The Crown Prosecutor decides. And in the past, the Crown Prosecutor has refused to bring forth these cases because they didn't want to tie up the court's time for what they've seen as non-substantial issues.
Okay.
And the other part of it is if they take them to court for disturbing the peace or something like that, which is a federal offense, they get a criminal record. So their position was, they do not want to give somebody a criminal record because someone is making noise for a party on a weekend or something like that on occasion. That's not the intent, they believe, of the court system to do that. And they felt that to do that, the court would throw it out, the judge would throw it out, or it would tie up court time and backlog other more important or significant cases. So it's not an RCMP issue. So regardless of this bylaw, the other bylaws, the RCMP will enforce them as they deem appropriate, the same as our bylaw enforcement officer will enforce it as we deem appropriate. The hours are irrelevant.
Okay, so they'll still go forward, and if somebody is, if there's a viable complaint, they'll go forward and issue a ticket?
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, yes. And whether it's under our bylaw or under provincial statute or federal statute is up to the RCMP or our bylaw enforcement officer to decide, not for anybody else.
Let's settle that.
Yep.
Any other questions or comments? Deputy Mayor Mews?
The motor vehicles. I thought that the province has given to the municipalities now to take care of this problem.
It's not passed yet, has it been?
If you wish me to address it, the province has passed legislation or has introduced legislation, I think it's passed, which gives municipalities the ability to enforce some motor vehicle issues. However, we have no authority to do it. So while it was nice on paper, it's unfair and inappropriate because we do not have access to the motor vehicle records of individuals. And so if we see somebody calls and complains that somebody has got a loud muffler, we have no way of determining who that person was because we don't have access to a license plate number. We do not legally, they will not provide us with the information of who that person is. And then it gets into the same thing. Are we willing to spend $7,000-$8,000 probably to go to court and all the legal costs because somebody's driving down the road on a loud muffler? The province of Nova Scotia and the RCMP can do it significantly cheaper, and they have to decide whether it's appropriate for them, wise use of their time to do that stuff. So while the power has been given to municipalities, unless you're HRM or CBRM that have their own police force and have access to the motor vehicle records, it's of zero use to us.
Councillor Charlton?
Just to add to what Mr. McNeil said, that's why the committee took that out, was because our bylaw officer doesn't have the authority to pull people over and do that, so we wouldn't, it doesn't apply to us.
Let's settle your question, Deputy Mayor Mews. Any further questions, comments? I'm going to call for the question. All those in favor of the motion for first reading? Opposed? Carried. Naming of the universally designed bike park. As we know from our last discussion point, although she's in Nova Scotia, I'll let her, it's Henley. She can explain this.
So what we discussed at our last meeting, the PAC Autism Nova Scotia Society brought forward a recommendation for the naming of the universally designed bike park of Etley Milliken, which is a Mi'kmaq name, and
a motion to be made. If someone would like to make that recommendation, Councilor Romero, in whose district this will fall?
I move that the Council of Region of Queens Municipality name the universally designed play park to be constructed adjacent to Queens Place Amero Center on Old Cobb's Barn Road, LT, hope I get this right, Meltima, Queens Universal Design Play Park.
And that is seconded by Councilor Gidney. Any further questions or comments? Councilor Charlton?
When we discussed this at our last council meeting, Deputy Mayor Muse just mentioned about having the translation on the sign. So has that been sorted out, that will happen?
So that was discussed. The translation, meaning we are playing here, will be placed there. But the phonetic translation was felt that it would be inappropriate. We don't phonetically translate a French name. We don't phonetically translate, you know, Portmartoon. And it was seen, it was felt from the society that equal feelings toward Mi'kmaq people. Why would we put a translation for their language? And we don't put translations for other, or we don't put phonetic spelling for other languages.
My understanding was only for the We Are Playing Here, that's all.
Yeah, we will put the We Are Playing there. Yeah. We will put that translation will be there. But not the phonetic, but not the phonetic pronunciation. Yeah. Any other questions? If not, I'll ask for the question. All those in favor? Passed. Special Constable Hurley. Dangerous and unsightly premises report, 6.3. There is a recommendation that actually should be made prior to Special Constable giving her report. Councillor Fancy, in whose district this is.
I so recommend that the Region of Queens Municipality Council declare the property located at 536 West Street, Milton, Queens County, Nova Scotia, and identified as PID number 7007-4323 as dangerous or unsightly as defined in the Municipal Government Act of Nova Scotia, and that the Region of Queens Municipal Government Council cause an order to be served upon the deceased owner and parties of interest of the property located at 536 West Street, Milton, Queens County, Nova Scotia, requiring that within 30 days of the date of the service of the order, the following work be carried out. Number one, remove of derelict RV. Number two, removal of derelict vehicle. Number three, removal of derelict sailboat and trailer. Number four, removal of derelict speedboat, trailer, and motor. Number five, cleanup and removal of construction and demolition debris from two collapsed outbuildings. And number six, removal of miscellaneous items strewn about, such as scrap metal, household garbage, plastics, propane tanks, vinyl siding, oil barrels, piles of lumber, etc. And that if the parties of interest fail to comply with the order, the administrator may cause the requirements of the order to be carried out and all the expenses incurred by the Region of Queens Municipality become the responsibility of the parties of interest.
And seconded by Councillor Brown. Mr. Constable Hurley.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. 536 West Street, Milton, Queens County, Nova Scotia. PID number 7007-4323. Property owner David C. Winters, deceased. Upon receiving many formal complaints regarding dangerous and unsightly conditions on this property, conducted several site inspections, had several meetings with family, financial institutions, Region of Queens building officials, neighboring residents, it has been concluded that action must be taken to remedy the condition of the offending property. This property has been on my roster for several into further disrepair. Two old buildings have collapsed and many items of rot require removal, including various items strewn about the property. There's been an influx of wildlife and rodent activity which are housed throughout the property and causing havoc in the neighborhood, especially with children. In order to remedy the current dangerous and unsightly conditions, recommendations are as follows, which you have read. Timeline is 30 days, recommended. You've all seen photographs this morning, and I will state that there's no property representation here this morning.
Any questions of Special Constable Hurley? Councilor Gidney?
Is this property been up on for tax sale?
No, it hasn't.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Councilor Romero?
Is the family around here that they can do the removal? Or?
There's no vested interest in the property whatsoever.
Councilor Charlton?
How long has this home been vacant for?
Approximately 4 to 5 years.
Further questions?
If I may, Madam Chairperson, we need to make an amendment to the motion. The second paragraph indicates that the region caused the board to be served upon the deceased owner and the parties of the interested property. We can't serve a person who's deceased, so that wording should be amended to reflect that the region caused the board to be served upon the estate of David C. Winters.
Yes.
And remove that upon the deceased owner and parties of interest to the property. So it should be amended to serve upon the estate of David C. Winters, located at 536 West Street. And the same on the last paragraph, and that if the estate of David C. Winters fails to comply as opposed to the parties of interest. Because the only people that legally have the ability to do it are the estate. Parties of interest really don't have any standing unless they apply to the court for standing or something.
Councilor Brown, you wish to make the amendment?
I move that we amend the motion to reflect the changes that CAO McNeil has mentioned and include the estate of David C. Winters.
Seconded by Councilor Charlton. Any discussion on the amendment? I'll ask for a question on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment? Carried. All those in favor of the main motion as amended? Carried. Ms. Vina, Director of Corporate Services. So this very lengthy document that we all received basically pertains to if we as a municipal government had to close our landfill tomorrow or 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, what would it cost us? Because, you know, as a municipality, we need to be financially responsible for things moving forward. So while we may not see a landfill close in our tenure, we need to ensure that there's enough money in our reserves to cover that. And in order to have enough money in the reserves, we have to know what it's actually going to cost, because it's not just the matter of shutting the gate and putting closed on the side. So you can continue. Oh, we have a motion first, and then Ms. Vino will continue. So there is a recommendation. Councilor Brown?
I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approve the appointment of ACOM Canada to complete a solid waste post-closure liability report with the cost to be funded from the post-closure reserve fund.
Seconded by Councilor Charlton. You may continue.
As Mayor Norman said, we are required through public sector accounting to comply with the new regulation that's coming in next year, asset retirement obligations, and we talked about that when the financial statements were discussed. Currently, there's a $2 million discrepancy in our financial statements between the liability as it is calculated and the amount of money that we have in the reserve to pay for it. There's
discrepancies. So this report that we're asking for is a very, very comprehensive document. It is not the same report as had been previously done. This report is a very comprehensive, detailed document that will look at all aspects of the landfill, how much will cost us to close now or 10 years from now, based on these people are experts, what they've seen, they've done this type of work before, and it's something that we will use to get a baseline on where we are currently, so we will have to adjust our numbers accordingly. It will certainly give me a greater level of comfort that the liability that we're calculating is more accurate. And that is why the cost is so so high. It's almost $150,000. Currently, we have $5.2 million in the reserve, and the liability was calculated at $3.3 million. So there is money in there to fund it. It's necessary, and it's a very good investment in the future, so that we all, you as counselors and us as staff, will have some peace of mind going forward. That people that do this have the environmental expertise and the engineering expertise to be able to give us numbers that we can rely on and we can base future decision making on.
Questions for Ms. Vino? Councilor Fancy.
I think it's a great time. It's kind of hard to look at the LCAT on. it's a great time to look at this, because there's so many things going on, even with the landfills, there's a couple of them being privatized, and there's so many things that could happen if we don't know the complete numbers, and it'd be great to know that we have $2 million over,
right?
But you don't know if we are or not until we can be able to get an accurate account of where we are.
Correct, and Councillor Fancy, that will also play into the amount that we allocate for tonnage that comes into the solid waste. There's always an allocation per ton that goes into the post-closure. So we'll be able to evaluate those fees based on the numbers that were given to make sure they're not too high or too low. And I know it says in the report that the references were checked by our Director of Engineering and Public Works, and I haven't been here yet. So there were no concerns.
Any other questions or comments? Councilor Carlton?
I'd just like to note that Joanne always does a good job of explaining. I don't think it leads for many questions, so thank you.
Thank you. And like the report says, it's a rolling ball game, because it speaks of the fact that the federal government may put more severe emphasis on leachate control. They may change the way we do it now into actually having to have it all processed and chemically analyzed. And so even though we come up with this, I would assume they would still account for if and when the federal government makes their changes, then this is the money we're going to have, because then the leachate has to be handled in a different fashion. So it's, yep, one always has to be very careful when one owns a landfill to look to the 50 and the 100 year down the road.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. A lot of people think that closing a landfill is just dumping gravel on top of it and walking away, but we have a legal requirement for 30 years of testing. And about 10 days ago, we had a meeting of Region 6 Solid Waste Management, and what came out of that meeting was that there is a landfill in Ontario that about 20 years after it was closed has sprung a leak, and they're going to have to remediate that. And we have no idea what the costs are going to be if we run into that. So this study will find what our potential liability and downside is for any of those things,
yes,
plus the testing.
And this also will affect the depreciation expense going forward, because it was being calculated in a certain way that I don't necessarily think is accurate. So it'll give a really solid baseline so we can look at that expense also.
Any other further questions? Councilor Romero?
Roughly how many years do we foresee this landfill operating?
Councilor Grant. Councilor Grant. Director Grant.
Sure, thank you. So right now we have plans in place that we can operate for another 75 to 80 years out there.
Okay.
However, regulations are changing all the time, since the ground steel, so whether the design that we have now and the space requirements will apply 20 years from now, we can develop.
And it also depends upon the financial, like, does it make sense to do it?
Right.
Like, there may come a point in time when it may make more sense for us to ship ours somewhere else and not worry about. So, because you never know.
But in order to make that decision, you need to have numbers that you can rely on as a foundation.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hearing no further questions, I'm gonna ask for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? And there were no items for discussion. This will be our last council meeting in January because until January, as the fourth Tuesday would fall on the 28th. So our next council meeting that we're going to see will be December the 11th, but we do have three in camera items, so I need a motion to move in camera. Moved by Councilor Gidney, seconded by Councilor Brown. All those in favor? Councilor Hawks? Yeah. Passed. So we'll have there is a recommendation as a result of an in-camera item. Deputy Mayor Muse?
I move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality enter into a lease with Global Empire Corporation for space at the Liverpool Business Development Center.
And that's seconded by Councilor Gidney. Any questions or comments? As we know, this is basically for us giving direction to our CAO to enter into a lease with Global Empire Corporation. As that lease becomes valid, Global Empire Corporation, we suspect, will be making an announcement regarding their intentions for that space. Any other comments? I'll ask the question. All those in favor? Passed.